Securities offered through Cetera Advisor Networks, LLC. Member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Carroll Financial Associates, Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Carroll Financial and Cetera Advisor Networks are not affiliated.
Retirement. You'd love to live it out in comfort and have the flexibility to help the people and causes you love. You're far enough along to know you don't have all the answers, but you're willing to learn. So welcome to Common Sense Retirement with Chris Carroll. He's a second-generation certified financial planner professional who's all about you, your goals, and helping you overcome the challenges standing between you and your dreams. Now, here's the host of Common Sense Retirement, Chris Carroll.
This is the Carroll Financial Network. You're listening to Common Sense Retirement with me, Chris Carroll. My sidekick, as always, is Emily Netzel. How are you, Emily?
I'm doing great, Chris. How about you?
I'm good. Well, we're here to give you simple strategies for a better life. Now, some people believe that history repeats itself. Mark Twain said, "It may not repeat, but it sure does rhyme." Technicians have analyzed the price movement over time in the stock market, and they believe that markets do repeat and have identifiable cycles and patterns that you can identify and learn from. So once you identify them, you can react accordingly. And there are many disciplines to this technical analysis. Our guest today, Tim Wood, is here to talk about his cycles theory work. Many have studied Tim's work, and it's been awestruck by just how accurate it has been. But first, Emily, do you know what yesterday was?
No.
Okay. So yesterday was September 4th.
Yes.
Also known as Force Friday.
Oh, dear.
Yesterday was the official kickoff of the Star Wars season, which will go until now and from now until the new movie comes out right before Christmas. And, you know, it's funny. There are all these new releases and everything about it being Force Friday. I just thought it was really funny. And but September 4th is also a big day for my family. You see, my grandmother's birthday was yesterday. Yesterday. Happy birthday, Ruth Carroll.
Happy okay. birthday.
One of my uncles, Flip Moore's birthday, was yesterday. Happy birthday, Flip. My sister-in-law's birthday was yesterday. Happy birthday, Terry. And one of my best friends from college, actually, his birthday was yesterday. Happy birthday, Tim.
Nice.
So I have four friends, family, that have birthdays on the same day, September 4th.
Makes it easy to remember.
It does. You know, but have you ever promised to do a favor for somebody or agreed to do a favor for somebody and it ended up that favor was a lot bigger and different than you thought it was?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So a little in over your head?
Yeah.
Okay.
So about a month ago, my wife said, you know, that we were going to throw my sister-in-law, Terry's 40th birthday party mm-hmm. for her. And I said, okay, that's great, you know. And then about a week later, she came back and said, well, Terry doesn't want a traditional birthday party. She didn't want to draw attention to the fact that she's turning 40.
Okay.
So we're going to just have a Labor Day party. And I'm like, okay, that sounds great.
Perfect.
A week later, it was, and it's a Labor Day party with a 70s theme. And a week after that is, oh, by the way, everybody's bringing their kids. And so
they're going to be a parade.
So by yesterday, I find out that there's like 40 people coming to my house. Oh. About half of them are children.
Well, Harlan and Violet are going to love that.
Yeah, my kids will. No, I'm not sure my kids are going to love that. I think there's going to be kids touching their stuff, and
okay.
I'm not sure they're going to be happy about that. But we actually had to like recruit an extra babysitter to be there, and when we realized how many children it was. And so this morning, I was in the Harris Teeter shucking corn, and I sat there long enough shucking corn that, you know, I was making friends. I was talking to people as they walked by.
I've got to ask, how many ears did you got?
I shucked 40 ears. Of corn in the grocery store today. I'm so
Everybody
glad
gets
that they,
one.
Yep, I'm so glad that they put like the little trash bin right there next to the corn, so I can shuck
them.
It there instead of taking it home. So it was an interesting morning for me, but you know, I'm rolling with it. It's going to be all right. We're going to spend today getting ready, and then tomorrow is the actual party.
Okay.
I'm looking forward to it. Well, today's guest is going to talk about technical analysis, and I am, you know, admittedly not someone who really follows technical analysis, who really pays a lot of attention to it. I do look at what some other technicians do, but I've always kind of, I mean, to be honest, I've always called it kind of throwing chicken bones. It just doesn't speak to me particularly well. And reading the academic work on technical analysis kind of has led me to believe that there's only a few pieces of it that really work and that it's still hard to make great profits on it even when it does work. So I'm – but I am an open-minded person, and I am happy to learn more about it and happy to be proven wrong. So today's guest, Tim Wood, he's a CPA, and he's editor and publisher of Cycles News and Views. Tim used his methods to correctly identify the 2000 top in equities and the magnitude of the decline that came afterwards, used statistical analysis to predict kind of the worst financial crisis that we went through in 08 and 09. Some of the methods were used to call housing tops in 2005, commodity tops in 2008, and the 9-year cycle top in gold in 2011. So Tim's got a great track record of making this work. And I want to welcome Tim. Welcome to the show. Welcome to Common Sense Retirement.
Welcome, Tim.
Well, thank you for having me, Chris, Emily. I hope I can change your mind. Chris, this stuff works. It works. I promise you it works.
Well, you know, as I said, I have an open mind. It doesn't mean that I'm an easy sell, though, either, right? But tell me, let's start with the fact that you're a CPA, and I find it really interesting that you're a CPA and you do technical analysis. Now, did you have to stop doing the accounting work? Did you have too much personality to stay an accountant?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
No, I knew before I graduated from college that accounting wasn't for me, but I had gone too far.
Yep.
And so I had to finish. And then when I finished, you know, got my degree, let me back up a step. While I was working on my degree, I took some finance classes, mm-hmm. of course, as, you know, as electives and so forth. And one of the classes was a 400 level fundamentals of investments. And, you know, the guys deriving equations and crossing your eyes with all this boring stuff were somewhere in that course was this chapter, a single chapter on technical analysis. And, you know, the whole thesis behind technical analysis really is that everything known to man, and if you think about it, is discounted into that price bar at the end of the day. I mean, if you're a participant in that market, or if you're not a participant in that market, or if you think you know something, or if you think you don't know something, it's all discounted into that price bar. Mm-hmm. And that made a lot of sense to me.
Yeah.
And so that started the self-study. But anyway, you know, I graduate, and you know, I have to take the CPA exam, and I do, and I worked as an accountant for several years, and then moved on to the telecommunication industry, and worked 10 years as an analyst in telecommunications, and then you know, in 2000, you know, I made the call. I did the research. It was published. I got the front cover of Technical Analysis of Stocks Commodities magazine. Made the call based on, you know, cycles is merely a way of quantifying trend. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can quantify trend, then you can develop some expectations. It doesn't mean it's going to happen 100%, but if you have a high probability outcome, then you have a high probability outcome. But anyway, it was a nice piece. I submitted it. A friend of mine suggested that I submit it to the magazine, and I did. They called me back within like 15 minutes, and like, we want it. I got the front cover, and it was laughed at.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, and but then it happened,
mm-hmm.
and so that started. You know, people then they said, well, you know, maybe this isn't so funny after all. And that started the research. I call it a research letter because it's much, much more than a newsletter.
Okay.
And so that started the business. And then next thing I knew, you know, hey, I'm no longer involved in telecommunications. I'm doing what I love. And, you know, it's truly a passion. And like I said, the track record, it pretty much speaks for itself.
Tim, let me stop you for just a second, because there are a couple of things in there that I thought were really powerful. The calling the top, quote-unquote calling the top, people have to remember that if you were making that call in the late 90s right into 2000, the market had been on such a tear for the 5 years previous to that, or the almost 20 years previous to that, that people had gotten to the point where they just expected equity returns to be 12 and 15% a year forever. You know, people in our business that were doing financial planning were running projections over the next 40 years where the return on a balanced account was 9%. You know, it was really kind of a ridiculous time. And I remember because I was sort of just getting into the business then, you know, sort of, you know, I remember doing plans and we would do a plan with a 6.5 or 7% return and have the client say, well, that's way too low. You really think you're only going to get 6.5% over the next 20 years? And my dad would always be like, you know, I'm not even, he was always of the opinion, I'm not even sure if I'm going to get that. But I do want to come back and talk a little more, and I do want to talk about the track record some. I want to talk about your cycles work. I think it's really interesting. I do want to share it with our listeners, but we're going to take a quick break before we do. You're listening to Common Sense Retirement with me, Chris Carroll, and today's guest is Tim Wood. He's CPA and editor and publisher of Cycles News and Views here on the Carroll Financial Network.
Common Sense. It's common everywhere, except in financial planning. You're listening to Common Sense Retirement with Chris Carroll of Carroll Financial, where you get simple strategies for a better life.
This is the Carroll Financial Network. You're listening to Common Sense Retirement with me, Chris Carroll, where we give you simple strategies for a better life. Today's guest is Tim Wood. He's a CPA and the editor and publisher of Cycles News and Views. We're talking about technical analysis. Right before the break, Tim, we were talking about calling the top of the technology bubble, kind of the end of 99, beginning of 2000, and getting kind of published on calling the top. You know, my mom actually made a sort of different call on the top right there. She decided to retire from financial planning right at the top of the market. It was brilliant in her part. It had nothing to do with the hard work of figuring out what the market was about to do. She just decided she was done. So I joke about that, but brilliance on her part, right? Absolutely. So, Tim, tell us, you know, we were talking before the break, you're talking about getting on the cover of, remind me of the magazine, Technical...
Stocks. It was a technical analysis of Stocks and Commodities magazine, and then it was also published in Trader's World, and there was one other one, and I can't even remember the name of it, but the main article was published in Technical Analysis of Stocks and Commodities magazine.
Yeah, we won't hold you to that. That was, you know, 15 years ago or so. You might not have to remember everyone. So after that, you sort of started the newsletter, or research letter, I apologize. You just told me you're not going to call it a newsletter. We call it a research letter. And sort of since then, you've got this amazing track record of calling different tops in housing, oil, gold, silver, you know, and as well as the overall stock market. And so tell me kind of what's the theory behind it? What drives these calls?
It's really more so than technical analysis. It's quantitative analysis. It's just statistics. And you know, another crazy call was 2008, the week oil peaked, made the call on the air on a show by the name of Financial Sense. Commodities, oil in commodities, the commodity complex as a whole in 2013, it's published in my letter, December 2013, made the call. Wasn't on anybody's radar screen. Crude oil was still, you know, $100 plus, I think. I'm not looking at a chart. Don't hold me to the exact number. But it was nowhere on anybody's radar screen. It was going down. It made the call. All on statistics. It's real simple. Think about this, and I'll give you some meat. But think about an EKG that the doctor reads. It's just squiggly lines. It means nothing to the untrained eye. Think about the brainwave thing. It means nothing to you and I. But it has meaning to someone that understands it. Well, when you look at a stock chart, it's the same thing. It's just data. And if you understand how to read the data, it has quantitative meaning. Well, here's how simple the top was in 2000, for example. I identified that it was a 4-year cycle top. Well, let me back up one step. The cycle analysis is not some voodoo science. I studied from a guy by the name of Walter Bressert, he was at one point he was on the board, and I think he may have been like president or something of, there was a Cycles Foundation. I mean, and these guys studied everything from the cycles and sunspot activity to, you know, temperature changes to, you know, it doesn't matter. I mean, everything is a cycle in life. I mean, the, you know, day and night is a cycle. You breathing is a cycle. Everything's a cycle. And so Walter had put together this course. It took me literally a year. I worked harder at that course than I did in college. And it took a year to get through this thing. And what he had teaches you or taught me, I mean, he's not doing this anymore, but he taught me how to identify those cycles. And like I said, it's just trend. And most people look at cycles, they think they're static. You know, in other words, it's they're very rigid. Well, they're not. Cycles breathe. They contract. They expand. But they have personality. And anyway, the 2000 top was this simple. I looked at it. And it has to do with structure and statistics, I should say. And it had topped, in the industrials had topped in January of 2000, S&P in March. But looking at the data going back to 1896, I had figured out that every four-year cycle that had peaked in 20 months or less had moved below the previous four-year cycle low. Well, the previous four-year cycle low was the 98 low. And I looked at that, and it was 100%, 100% of the time. So, I had nothing to lose. I mean, I wrote a pretty cool article, and they liked it. They published it, and it happened. So that statistic became, I think that was the sixth time, fifth or sixth time, and it's 100%. And so what I did is I took Walter's work, or the methods that he taught me on identifying the cycles, and I developed what I call the DNA markers, and we know cycles, they can contract and expand. You know, generally it's minor, but when you have the help of the Federal Reserve and all the money masters around the world, they can do quite a number on them, but they're still there. But you need a way of identifying, quantifying these tops and bottoms. And so that's where I focused. That was the next step. And like 2007, for example, you know, we had the low in 2002. We undercut the 98 low, just like I said, and then up we go. And everybody can count and say, well, 2002 was a low, so duh, 2006 was the next four-year cycle low. And I got a lot of attention with the four-year cycle and that call, and I had people fight me. And there was a little decline, I think it was in June or July 2006, and people said, you know, that's the four-year low. We're good to go now. It's off to the races. And I said, nah, I don't think so. You know, this is, you know, my DNA markers weren't there. And they didn't appear at that top. As a matter of fact, I said, what we have here is an extended four-year cycle. This thing is being pushed beyond belief, but it's still being pushed. You know, so maybe the four-year cycle in that case makes it a little hard to believe it's a four-year cycle, but whatever label you want to put on it, the cyclical advance out of the 02 low was extending. And because of the lack of the markers, I knew that. Well, we get into the July high, the market starts breaking down into August, and I had subscribers, man, it was so cool. I had subscribers, they were like, is this it, is this it? I'm like, no, I don't think so. This, you know, we need one more push-up. We need one more push-up. This is only, in my world, it was an intermediate decline and seasonal cycle decline. I said, this is only an intermediate decline. We need one more push to set us up with our markers. And that's exactly what happened. It's statistics. If you know that something's going to happen 80 or 90% of the time and it's not there, then it's a pretty darn safe call to make the call to say yay or nay, you know. And so I did, and then we pushed up into October. Everything fell into place like dominoes, bada-bing, bada-boom, made the call, bam. And as they extended that cycle, that stretch into the 2007 top, it was an easy call to say that, you know, look, the more they stretch this thing, the worse the outcome is going to be. And I had other statistics that I can get into in a minute, but I had other statistics that told me not only was it an extended cycle, but that when the decline began, that it would go below the 02 low. I know, sounded crazy, but it's in print. It worked.
Tim.
And it was based on statistics.
Okay, Tim. You know, all it really is interesting what you're saying here, and I do want to talk about where we are in the cycle today, and try to help people think about you know, where we are today and how these cycles might be affecting different parts of not only the equity markets but you know, commodities markets. I mean, we're certainly seeing some really interesting things in oil, and I'd love to get a little bit of your take on that as well. You know, if you're just tuning in or you missed the beginning of the show, we're talking today to Tim Wood. He's a CPA. He's editor and publisher of Cycles News and Views. When we get back, we'll take it a little more into modern, to what's going on today in markets. We'll talk a little bit about the volatility that we're seeing and see what you think. So if you have a question, want to ask something to us or ask something to Tim, feel free to give us a call, 704-570-1110. You're listening to Common Sense Retirement with Chris Carroll here on the Carroll Financial Network.
Common Sense Retirement with Chris Carroll. Simple strategies for a better life.
This is the Carroll Financial Network. You're listening to Common Sense Retirement with me, Chris Carroll, where we give you simple strategies for a better life. My sidekick, Emily Netzel, is here in the studio with me, and we're talking on the phone to our guest, Tim Wood. He's CPA and editor and publisher of Cycles News and Views. We've been talking a little bit about Tim's calls and in the past, and what kind of technical analysis, or what he's referring to more as statistical analysis, has kind of helped him predict about different financial markets. Tim, let me ask a question that really burns in my head when I read your track record. Why bother with the newsletter? If your predictions are this strong and this consistent, why don't you manage a hedge fund, make hundreds of millions of dollars, and live on an island somewhere in the Southeast Asia?
I don't know. I guess I don't know how to do that, and it's not what I do. You know, I'm an analyst. I do trade my own money, but as far as you know, I don't know. It's not what I do.
Okay. That's an honest answer. I just, you know, it's just what occurs to me. Before the break,
I would love to team up with someone. I mean, I got a buddy that you know, I don't know. Who knows what's in the future, but it's just, you know, it hadn't evolved to that point.
Yeah. Before the break, we were kind of talking about history. You were talking about how the cycle between the 2002 low and the eventual crash that happened in 08, early 09, extended, that it wasn't a four-year cycle, that it extended longer than that. Let me ask a question. So are we seeing that again in this market? Have we extended that cycle again?
Absolutely. And I want to lay out the whole groundwork for people. So let me do that. I want to give them answers because it's gonna blow their mind. They're gonna think I'm crazy again, and maybe I am. But here's the other thing. Besides cycles, I do Dow theory work, and Richard Russell, which probably everybody knows Richard Russell, helped me get some of the original writings, or some of the original writings by, I call them the Dow theory founding fathers. I mean, I've got some, you know, to me, great historical documents by these guys, and I've gone through the material, and I realized some things that it was just profound, you know, with like a, you know, to overlay it with the cycles work, and based on traditional Dow theory valuations, based on just basic technical analysis, you know, volume characteristics, and some other things. Here's my thesis. Let me walk you through this. I believe that the secular bull market, Richard Russell called the secular bear market bottom at the below in 74, and he called the Dow theory primary trend change in September of 99. And it was a good call. The market moved to another marginally new high in January, but the Dow theory, the transports did not confirm. The Dow theory signal was a good call, and you know, there's nothing I can say about that call other than it was perfect. And most people don't understand Dow theory because they've never read the original material, and I've yet to see a Dow theory book that does it justice. And so there's 99% of the material out there is not really worth reading. But that said, looking at the volume characteristics and just looking at the actions by the Fed, the secular bull market topped in 2000. It topped in 2000. Now, that's a crazy concept to grasp. But if you look at the volume characteristics going up into the 2000 top, for example, and this is just basic technical analysis, grab a book off the shelf and read it, you'll find this, is that as price expanded, volume expanded. Price would move down even into the 87 low, and then volume declined. And then price would move up, volume would expand. And so you had an expanding market into the top in 2000. All right, and then if you look at some of the, and I'm not a great fundamentalist, but if, to me, this is just common sense. But if you look at, if you also look at like labor force participation data, it expanded into 2000. If you look at the velocity of money, it expanded. There was, it diverged with the, gave you a little non-confirmation in technical terms, but it diverged or expanded into, and I can't see the chart real well, but 97 or 98. So it gave us a little subtle hint of the top. So my thesis is, based on technical analysis is and this stuff, is that the secular bull market topped in 2000. And from the 2000 top forward, the volume characteristics are classic secular bear market behavior. I mean, it's undeniable.
So we're in a bear market now?
We've been in sounds crazy, sounds discrediting. I'm going to say it. We've been in a bear market since 2000.
So the move from 2009 till now or so is the largest bear market rally in history by a factor of what? Five? Six times?
But yes. And let me finish though.
Okay.
And here's the thing. Everybody knows about the 66 to 74 bear market, right?
Yeah.
All right. Are you aware that in, I forget the year, but I'll pull it up on the chart right here real quick, but in one of those rallies out of one of those four-year cycle lows, it was actually in 73. The market moved to a new high within the context of that bear market and then collapsed 45% into the low, the bear market low in 74. And so what I'm saying is that the actions by the Federal Reserve, and it's no secret what they've done. Look, they came out, they cut interest rates and cut interest rates. They created the housing bubble. They created the banking crisis. They threw what we thought was at the time the kitchen sink at this thing to try to save the economy. Well, why the heck did they do that? If everything is so good, if why did they do that going into the 2007 high? Because things weren't good, because they were trying to jumpstart the economy, because they were trying to reignite, the underlying or the secular bear bull market that had ended. They were trying to, their words were, stimulate aggregate demand. They were trying to get it going again. It was ether in the carburetor, but it's still a secular bear market, and they managed to create the worst financial crisis since the Great Depression in the process, and it finally collapsed. According to the statistics, and it went down below the 2002 low. Now, check this out. According to Dow Theory, where I go and read their writings, not mine, long before I was born, these guys wrote, this is a secular bull market, this is a secular bear market, this is a secular bull market, this is a secular bear market. So I looked at their work, I overlaid it with my cycles work, and what I found is, and this statistic is so far 100%er as well, in every secular bear market since the inception of the averages in 1896, every four-year cycle low has moved below the previous four-year cycle low. Now let's check this out. Overlay this.
Hold on. Stop for a second, Tim. If you're just joining us, we're talking to Tim Wood. He's CPA. He's editor or publisher of Cycles News and Views. It's a research letter that he does, and we're talking about technical analysis. Tim's been talking about the what he classifies as the extended bear market that we're still in right now. Let me stop you and say what you just said, Tim. You just said that every 4-year low in the cycle has been lower than the previous.
In every secular bear market.
Oh, during a secular bear market. I gotcha.
During a secular bear market.
Okay. I was very confused because that would mean the stock market could never go up over a long period of time, right?
No. All right. So given that statistic, it's data mining and statistics. So check this out. All right. I just told you, that I thought the top occurred in 2000. And if you look at the volume characteristics changed in 2000, look, you need to read my July letter. I asked, if you don't have it, I'll get it to you because I laid all this out there. But the volume characteristics changed in 2000 to bearish. All right. And then you look at the job participation rate data, where the economy slowed, you look at the velocity of money data, things slowed down. Everything tells me we shifted into a secular bear market. But watch this. I said in 2000 that we would go below the 98 low. Well, at that time I hadn't discovered this statistic because I didn't have the Dow theory stuff. But lo and behold, in 2002, we moved below the 98 low. Well, that, again, that's a new statistic that I found, is that in every secular bear market, every four-year cycle has moved below the previous four-year cycle low. All right, so then, watch this. We rally into the 2007 high, and woohoo, we made a new high. But, just like I said, moving into that high, I said, they're only making matters worse, because I discovered this statistic at that time, and I said, I think we're in a secular bear market still, based on all these factors, and we're going below the 98, below the 2002 low. And guess what? We did.
Okay, so let's get to the end of this. So does that mean we're doing it again, Tim? We're going to
think so.
We're going to go below the previous low again.
The statistic says we are. If we don't, it's the first time since 1896 that statistic will be invalidated. I don't have a crystal ball to say we are, and I'm not trying to cop out. I'm telling you that based on the statistic, if that statistic is fulfilled, odds are high. Yes, we're going below the 09 low before this is over, and it's just beginning.
So how will you know when it's over? How will you know when the bear market's over?
I have DNA markers, man. DNA markers. You have statistics. You have cycles. There's layers. You have short, intermediate, longer term cycles, and you look at, I identified the low in 07, '09. I told my subscribers, I said, look, we know this is a low of a higher degree, and it builds. You have an expectation, and then you look for those expectations to be fulfilled and give you that hard data. Can you pick the top tick or the bottom tick? No. But let me read you something if I can see it, because I don't have my glasses. But this is off of the July letter. I mean, I'm telling you, this stuff works. And let me back up a second before I read that. What I'm trying to tell you and your listeners is that I understand the intentions are probably good in trying to save the market and rekindle, the animal spirits or whatever it is they call it, and extend this thing, get it going again. But it doesn't work. The cycle has to contract. You have to have that washout. And in the process, all they've done is they've camouflaged this thing. They have camouflaged, higher equity prices have camouflaged the underlying secular bear market. And this time around, commodities didn't participate. Last time, we had housing, we had commodities, and so on and so forth. This time, the only asset class that really has participated is equities. I mean, gold, okay, it topped in 2007 or 2011 with the so it did move to a new high, but we got that top right too. And what I'm saying is here, this is all camouflage, it's all smoke and mirrors. And the danger going forward is people don't understand the risk here, because they don't understand the statistics, but they don't understand the risk. And what's going to happen is we get a decline. People are going to go, dang, that was ugly. Glad it's over. But it isn't going to be the bottom.
Okay. Well, I appreciate you being on the show, Tim. I think it's really interesting. I would like to, if you can hold on, we'll talk just a second after this break. I don't want to let you go too soon. But we're up against it. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Common Sense Retirement with me, Chris Carroll. We're talking today to Tim Wood. He's a CPA. He's editor and publisher of Cycles News and Views. It's a research letter. We're talking about the long bear market that we're still in. You're listening to the Carroll Financial Network.
Afterwards, nothing beats a Fairway Green lawn. Go to fairwaygreen.com or call them 392-0811.
News Talk 1110 WBT.
Common Sense Retirement, simple strategies for a better life.
This is the Carroll Financial Network. You're listening to Common Sense Retirement with me, Chris Carroll. Today's guest, we've been talking to Tim Wood. He's a CPA and the editor and publisher of Cycles News and Views. It's a research letter he does. We've been talking about Tim's belief that we are still in a secular bear market and that we're going to retest or surpass the lows that were put in March 9th, 2009. Tim, that might be wrong. You might be. Are you actually? I'm not sure based on your work if intraday pricing counts or if it's really about closes. Do we need to pass the intraday low that we reached March 7th, or is the March 9th date right?
I'll take either. I mean, it's close enough for government work. I mean,
it's depressing either way. I mean, it's depressing either way. You're talking about the S&P 500 at, you know, below 667 or below 661, I think, was the other number, or 62.
The answer to the question, cyclically, it's intraday. With Dow theory, you use close only.
Okay.
Chris, I know I blew your mind. You probably wasn't expecting that, but man, I mean, is it any crazier than? I mean, that is the exact same reaction that I got at the 2000 top, at the 2007 top, and in oil. Actually, I mean, I know it sounds crazy.
I didn't say it was crazy. I'm not trying to imply that. I'm depressed by it. I mean, depressing.
Well, I didn't know if you were sounding
gut wrenching.
I knew you weren't expecting me to say that, and I. But it is what it is. But you know, hey, it's like I said. It's just data, I'm gonna make sure you get the July letter. I want you to read it.
Yeah, I'm happy to. I'm happy to do a little follow up on the show with kind of our thoughts on the numbers, because I'd love to see it. I mean, if somebody's listening and wants to learn more about what you do, or what should they do from here?
Well, the research material is available at cyclesman.com, and you know, I do some short term updates as well. Three nights a week to kind of connect the dots between the letters. And let me say this, even if I'm wrong on this call, I mean, it's statistics, and statistics, I mean, you know, I'm not, this is not an out. I know it.
Yeah.
I mean, I know firsthand. I mean, statistics are statistics, and sooner or later, one of them is going to be wrong,
sure,
or not going to be fulfilled. I get that. But here's the minimum that you can't dismiss. That risk does exist, because that statistic has been since 1896. It's 100%. And so that being said, I don't know if the low is going to be violated or not. But I'll say this, I'm not willing to bet against a 100% statistic.
Tim.
So the risk is enormous. And you work the ends to the middle as it declines. And we get a low that starts to see the proper structure and some DNA markers above that level, then so be it. But until that happens, I have to stand by that statistic and the expectation. In other words, until the statistic is proven that it's not going to be fulfilled, I have to assume that it will, is my stance.
Yep. Well, thanks, Tim. We appreciate you being on the show. I'll tell you this. I'm sure that you already got me saying when. If we retest those lows, you're going to be a very popular man, but I'm going to be one of those people struggling to try to get you back on the show to tell you how smart you are.
Well, I hope you have me back before then when it gets ugly.
I'm happy to do that as well, but it's been good having you on. Appreciate you taking the time, and we'll talk to you again. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris.
Thanks, Tim.
Thank you, Emily.
Emily, that is... To me, that's about the most depressing thing we've talked about. That's more depressing than a few weeks ago when we had the guy talking about taxes doubling over the course of the next 40 years.
Yeah, that was a bruiser, too, but this one takes the cake.
Yeah.
Yeah. I tend to be a little bit more optimistic.
Well, it's hard not to be more optimistic than somebody that's in my mind that negative. And I understand he's saying it's not his belief. It's not that he's a negative Nancy or a perma bear.
Right.
It's that's just what the statistics are telling him. And
it's been proven since 1896.
He kept talking about that.
Pretty powerful to hear.
It is. Just listening to him talk, you know, he's talking about it just being statistics. It makes me wonder if I ought to go out and learn something about this stuff. Because I'm actually pretty good at statistics and math and stuff like that. It's just I've never had much of an interest in technical analysis. As I said to start the show, you know, it's always been kind of throwing chicken bones in my book, or reading the entrails of seagulls or whatever it is.
Right,
you know,
right.
It's some kind of voodoo magic, and it reminds me, there's these old sayings in the market about, you know, economists correctly predicting 9 of the last 5 recessions.
Right.
Right. And, it just makes me wonder, is it something that gets called a lot? Are you calling tops all the time and bottoms all the time and you sort of happen to get enough of them if you do that? Or is it real? And obviously, I haven't looked enough into Tim's work to know for sure if it's real, but he certainly has a lot of documentation that seems to say that he's been right on these things before. Mm-hmm. So what would it take for the market to retest those lows from 2009? So the S&P today sits at about 2,100. You'd be talking about it going down to 650. It'd be a drop of 70% in the stock market, roughly.
Just around.
Mm-hmm. And again, I'm just kind of doing that off the top of my head. But the rough number would be a drop of about 70%. And we've come down 10 off the high. That's an awfully big move from here. And to me, I'm trying to figure out what would have to happen, like what globally would cause that.
Right.
Because it's such a big move that it's not something that could just happen by happenstance.
Absolutely.
It's not going to be – you couldn't have like a normal economic slowdown. During the 2008-2009 and the recession right then, the GDP for the U.S. dropped by, I think, about 11%. And that's a huge drop, the biggest drop since the Great Depression,
right?
Right? Even during that drop, earnings took a big hit, but the PE, the price to earnings on the market, which is how we measure sort of how expensive the market is, we measure it by PE, the price to earnings on the market got down to single digits during that drop down. Now, based on the earnings of the S&P this year, which are going to be between 115 and 120, if the S&P sold at 650 in order to set a new low that Tim was predicting, that would be a PE of 5.3, something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, that would be a massive fall. I mean, obviously, you'd have to have earnings come down, but you'd have to have earnings come down 30%.
Right.
To make it make any sense to me. And that's pretty scary.
It is. And it kind of makes you think that something more drastic globally.
Yeah,
might be something to stimulate that.
That's right. Well, I wonder, you know, if you're listening, I wonder if you have a plan for what happens if the market goes down 50%. I think some people are going to tell you, you can profit from that. Sure, you can. If you have a strong enough belief that the market's going to go down, you can do what's called shorting, and you can try to profit off the market going down.
Right.
But a balanced account wouldn't be down that much. I'm not saying that your assets would be down that much, but I am saying, you know,
that's
I think
exposure there.
You do, and I think people ought to know what their plan is. And it's one of the things we work on all the time is getting the risk right for people. If you're wondering if you'd like, you know, to talk to somebody about your risk level, feel free to give us a call. Go to our website. It's www.carolfinancial.com. Down at the bottom, you'll see a little coffee cup. But it says, I'd like a cup of coffee and a second opinion. And we ask people, you know, go there, click on the thing, have a meeting with us, sit down, let's talk about your risk level. Let's talk about what your plan is for a big risk event.
Time horizon.
Yeah. How long? Do you have long enough to get over it? And you know, what Tim wasn't predicting and doesn't seem to know is sort of how long is this going to last and when does it turn around?
Right.
You know, I'm certainly not as negative as Tim was on all of this, but, you know, I do think you have to have a plan for risk. I do think you have to go into it with your eyes wide open. You have to know, you know, what are we going to do about it?
Right.
Because I think that's what we spend our time focusing on, not worrying about what the market's going to do, but what are we going to do about it? Well, next week, one of the cheapest people in America, Denise Winston, she's so cheap, she was even featured in the Reader's Digest, Cheapest People in America. She is all about quality, but hates paying full price. So next week, she's going to teach you how to work the system to your advantage so that you can be cheap as well, I guess.
Looking forward to that one.
Well, I think that'll be a good positive upbeat one, you know, after we went through this week. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. I want to thank our guest, Tim Wood, today as well. You've been listening to Common Sense Retirement with me, Chris Carroll, my sidekick, Emily Netzel, right here on the Carroll Financial Network.
Local jobs on their website.